Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio this July 4th weekend, Independence Day weekend 2015. It is time for another installment of The Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. And the host and founder of the program is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. And we're going to kick this program off with Carol in conversation with a great guy, a fascinating individual, Donnie Most. He's best known for his role as Ralph Mouth on the TV series Happy Days. He's returning to New York on July 7th at the Iridium as part of his continued and growing national tour called Donnie Most Sings and Swings.
How did seeing the Jolson story influence you?
Yeah, well, I was 9 years old when I saw that movie. I grew up in Brooklyn, and it was on, they had something called Million Dollar Movie back then, and the movies would be on, the same movie would be on all week long, twice a night, and four times on Saturday and four times on Sunday. And I think I caught it on Tuesday night. Somebody told me about it. And then I think I watched it every time it was on that week. And I don't know why. It just I love Jolson from the, you know, from seeing the movie. Of course, he was played by Larry Parks, but he personified and captured and projected Jolson, and then it was Jolson's voice. And I just became a huge fan, even though I was only 9 years old. And I went out, bought his albums, and I would sing along to them. And then by the time I was about 13, my parents saw how serious I was about wanting to do this, and they found a school for me to attend in Manhattan. And it was a studio run by an old vaudevillian named Charlie Lowe, and it was a lot of young kids and teenagers that wanted to, you know, get into the business with, and it was, the emphasis was more on singing with that school. And that's how it all started for me. And actually, I got picked by Charlie probably about a year later to be in his professional troupe that performed up in the Catskill Mountains. So that summer when I was about 15, I was actually singing professionally in that troupe at all the hotels and the nightclubs up there in the Catskills that summer. That's kind of the beginning.
And so then you started in music, but you eventually transitioned into acting. First you did commercials, and then you actually got an audition for Happy Days, and it involved more than a screen test because there was also an interview to find out what you and the other actors were all about, and I think that's quite unusual.
Yeah, that is interesting. You're right. I mean, I kind of switched my focus into acting after that summer and went to a workshop and started doing more and more of that. And then when I went out to L.A., I did have that audition and several more, and then the screen test, as you just referred to. And part of that screen test, after we did the scene that was given to us, and we did, they wanted us to do an improvisation. And then at the very end, they actually did an interview on camera. And I think I remembered their thinking was that if you were going to be a regular on a show, they also wanted to get a sense of you beyond just, your portrayal of the character. They wanted to see who you were, like you said. And, so that was, I'd never had that, you know, I'd never been on an audition where they did something like that. So that was kind of different and unusual.
And I think it resulted in everybody on the show, their personalities working together and meshing so well. In reality, though, your personality is very far removed from Ralph Mouth.
That's correct. I was never really like Ralph in regards to the fact that I was not the funny man amongst my friends. I was never the clown. I was the opposite. I was usually sort of their audience. You know, my friends were the ones cracking jokes, and I was a good audience or their straight man. And I was pretty, you know, in high school, I was probably more like Richie Cunningham, Ron Howard's character. I was pretty, you know, shy and a really good student and a little more introspective and very different. But I knew people like Ralph, and so I fashioned it after people that I knew and sort of my imagination. And then as the years went by, our director, Jerry Paris, he was very much like that. And it started, I started getting a lot of things from Jerry, and he was a big influence on the development of the character in terms of a sort of a model for me.
And, of course, Happy Days remains such a well-loved show. It's touched the lives of so many people around the world. How much fun was it for you and the rest of the cast to work on it? And you're still, I think it's so nice that you are still so friendly with Ron Howard and Anson Williams and Henry Winkler and Marion Ross. That says a lot.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience. Just, you know, it seems... seems sometimes like a dream, and I guess it was. You know, you mentioned the meshing of personalities, and I think that was absolutely correct, that the producers, the exec producers, really did a great job of casting this so that there was that kind of chemistry, and all of us really respected and wound up loving each other and worked together so well and had a great time, and all of that, I think, came through and helped towards the success of the show. And as a result, we do, you know, we still are. It's like family. So I speak to Anson Williams, who played Napazzi. We speak several times a week, probably. And Henry, I just spoke to a couple of weeks ago. And Ron, of course, is pretty hard to reach. He's so busy. But we stay in touch by email, and I still see him. You know, probably a couple times a year. As a matter of fact, Ron and Marion came to one of my shows back, oh, several months ago. And Anson came, and Henry's been trying to get down, and I'm sure he will soon. But it's great that we're still, you know, it's kind of like your cousins and your aunt. It's that kind of a feeling.
And that's so nice and so unusual. Now, you have done acting and directing, and now you're getting back to your original roots, music, and you have been singing songs from the 20s and 30s, as you said, since the age of 15. What singer inspired you, and why? How did he inspire you?
Okay, well, after Jolson, as I mentioned, that was when I was younger, the singer that really had the major influence on me was Bobby Darin. And, you know, I used to listen to WNEW before going to sleep at night, and William B. Williams, and played all the great singers doing the great standards. And so I loved them all. It was Sinatra and Dino and Nat King Cole, Tony Bennett. But Darin, Bobby, for some reason, struck a deeper chord with me, and his style, his soul resonated with me, and his ability with so many different styles of music, and I think it came through in whatever he sang. So I remember I saw him in a movie, and I was like pretty young, and I asked my mom, who is this guy, because he sang a song in the film, and from that point on I was really interested. And then I found an album of his called This Is Darin, and I would sing along over and over and over, and then I discovered his great recording of Mac the Knife, and I probably sang along to that almost as much as he sang it. I was fortunate enough to see him perform live at the Copacabana in New York City when I was 18 years old, and that was an incredible experience for me. And I just always loved that music, and especially Bobby. And so I do, you know, in my show, I definitely cover some of Bobby's stuff, you know, because I just have to.
And when you move singing all your songs, but as I said, particularly Enjoy Mac the Knife, you really move and get into it. Now, what's most enjoyable about playing with your big band in your gigs? Donnie Most swings and sings. And how do you find connecting with your fans of all ages at supper and jazz clubs?
Geez, what I love about it, you know, the music is, for some reason, is so in my blood. I mean, when I hear those the great musicians and playing these great arrangements and music that has stood the test of time for, you know, over 50, 60, 70 years. I mean, they're standards for a reason because they're great. The lyrics, the music, and like I said, these arrangements. I just get so high. When I'm on stage and then when I'm having the great fortune to singing along with this, and because it was my first love, as you mentioned, it's not something that, you know, it's like a new undertaking, and it's been with me my whole life, and I just felt compelled to go back to it at this point. I thought if I was going to do it, I'd need to do it now, and I'm really glad I did, because the audiences seem to be enjoying it as much as, almost as much as I am, and which makes it so wonderful, because it's reciprocal, and then there is that interaction between them and myself, and I love sharing this music with them and communicating, and it's a different kind of expression than the acting, and it's just a blast. I'm having a total blast doing it.
That's Donnie Most in conversation with Carol Marks, returning to New York on July 7th at the Iridium as part of his continued and growing national tour called Donnie Most Sings and Swings. For information, go to donmost.net. Carol Marks conducted that interview, and as we work our way toward the break, let's listen to Donnie Most singing Mac the Knife.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and he shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Mac, babe, and he keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with his teeth, babe. Scarlet Bill.
When you purchase the latest TV, tablet, or smartphone, don't forget to do the right thing with your old ones. Recycle them. The Consumer Electronics Association and its members are making recycling your old devices as easy as buying new ones. Just go to greenergadgets.org, type in your zip code, and you'll instantly find the recycling location closest to your home. You'll also find recycling tips, like asking the store where you buy your new TV if they'll haul away your old one. Don't let your old tech tools clog your local landfill. Just visit greenergadgets.org.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is our host, Carol Marks, in conversation with Jen Lancaster. Jen Lancaster is a New York Times bestselling author, and she's going to talk to Carol about her latest memoir. It's titled, I Regret Nothing, a memoir. It's published by NAL.
Now, when did you first know you wanted to be a writer, and how did a corporate layoff? You were an executive at a dot-com company, and that layoff came in 2001, and how did that lead to your starting a blog?
I always enjoyed writing. When I was in high school, I worked on the newspaper, I worked in yearbook, and I was going to go to college to study journalism, and my father sort of tutted that and said, Jennifer, you're going to graduate and make $17,000 a year. And I'll be honest, I did not like the sound of that. So I had, well, actually at Purdue, I had a number of different majors, and it took me a very long time to graduate. Eventually, I got a degree in political science, which is very writing intensive. There's a lot of papers to write. But I got a job after college just working for an insurance company. But I was very fortunate, as this was the boom of the dot-com era. So I very quickly moved up the corporate ladder with great salary, with a great title, with a great position, but not really any true skill set outside of being able to write decent marketing letters. When the dot-com market crashed, I was one of the first people to lose her job, and I spent the next 2 years really reeling from that decision because I couldn't find anything. And my husband and I lost basically everything that we had worked for, our great apartment, our car. We were in terrible straits, and I was frustrated, so I began a blog. I began to post my thoughts on the internet, and the process of writing felt really good, and the fact that people were reading my writing and saying, this is something you might want to consider as a career. And I kind of went from there. What I think is funny is, well, my first 3 years as a writer, I made nothing. But my fourth year as a writer, I made $17,000. So I guess what I'm saying is my father was right.
And you also went on to say something that is true, that, but you put it so beautifully, becoming an author is the slowest get-rich scheme. And
absolutely.
But then your first memoir, Bitter is a New Black, which talked about, you know, your career demise and then starting your blog, really resulted in your being able to publish at least one book every year. And that really is something. Do you find that a difficult schedule?
You know what? I'm doing something that I love, so I don't want to say it doesn't feel like work, because there are some days I literally have to tie my belt loop to the chair to keep myself from getting up. And sometimes the process of writing can be hard, but there's no better feeling than actually having written and having gotten it done and then getting feedback. So I do love what I'm doing, and it really beats going to an office. And if I complain about my boss being a jerk, then that's me, because I run the show.
And that's a good way to put it. Now let's talk about your latest memoir, I Regret Nothing. Now, your books always have wonderful titles, and I love that title. So how did you come up with it?
It was a nod to Nora Ephron, I Remember Nothing, because she is, I think, one of the all-time great writers. And if I could even capture a little bit of what she had, then I think I would consider myself very lucky.
Now, you said this memoir was originally supposed to be about weight loss and looking at wellness as a whole. And while working on the project, though, you realized that your weight was a symptom, it wasn't a disease, and really what was holding you back was your regrets. So you decided to come up with a bucket list as a good way to do away with your regrets. And certainly one of them was being overweight. And then you decided that you were going to focus on your book instead, focusing in on losing weight, on your bucket list, and your goal about losing weight was 20 pounds. You know, I think creating a bucket list is so important. I have one myself. Very smart things to do, and you can start at any age.
What's on your list? I'm curious.
Oh, well, one of the things I did on my list was I wanted to travel on the president's plane. And
oh, wow.
I did his press plane, and I did that, and that was very exciting. What's on my list is I love to travel. I want to go to more countries, find out more about their cultures, their economies, and how they're dealing with older generations, their baby boomers. That's my goal.
That is really, really fun. That is a really great goal. On my bucket list, traveling to Italy was one of the things that I wanted to do. I'd been to Europe once when I was 16, and, you know, I remember nothing of it because my parents were 5,000 miles away and I could buy wine. So that was probably not the best introduction. But for the longest time, the idea of international travel I thought was daunting, even the notion of what I would have to go through to get a passport. Like, I didn't want to report my weight to the government, and apparently you don't have to, so I was pleased that I didn't commit treason in filling out my passport application by lying about my weight. But the whole process was easy, and then once I got to Italy, once I got to experience what it was like there, I thought, my God, I have been missing everything. Before I started this book, I didn't really want to go anywhere, and now I want to go everywhere.
I agree with you 150%. And we learn so much from travel. We learn how much people around the world are all alike and how different cultures are. And you learn to treasure them, and you learn so much. And I think that really is a wonderful thing, because it also, it's very good for your brain and it's very good for your soul.
Every American, if they get the chance, should go spend some time in Italy, because it changed my perspective on everything. The thing that I appreciated so much about Italy is there is a time for everything. In the morning is when you have your cappuccino. You don't have a cappuccino after 11. After 11, you have wine. It is time for wine. When you go out to dinner, that's what you do for the night. You might be at the restaurant for 4 or 5 hours, and, you know, you're eating slowly. You're savoring everything. You're enjoying everything. I did not see fat Italian women, and yet they were eating this unbelievable food. And what I noticed more than anything was everybody was really present in the moment. People weren't on their phones. They didn't have their iPhone and their BlackBerry going at the same time. They were
while
there.
They were eating,
they were connecting.
Too.
They were unplugged.
And I find that so annoying in this country that people are always using these new gadgets. They're at a lecture instead of listening. What are they doing? They're on their iPad and they're talking over the internet to somebody. You know, I think people just lose so much. In your memoir, you say that you really hadn't lost the amount of weight that you wanted to, but I got to congratulate you because you've lost 50 pounds since August. And I love what you said. I still eat whatever I want. I've simply changed what it is I want. And you know what? That's a good mantra for all of us that have to.
I've learned, in going through this process and learning how to eliminate regrets and learning how to make food not an emotional experience, it's kind of lost its power over me. I had what I thought was going to be a big setback in January. I ruptured my Achilles. I spent 2 months not walking. And I thought, not only am I going to not lose weight, I'm going to gain weight. But at this point, I'm down 70 pounds and exercise has become such an important part of my life because now I know what it's like to lose my mobility. One of the great things I got to do, I had a really progressive surgeon. 2 weeks into the surgery, I mean, long before I was able to stand on it, I was able to go to water aerobics. And my water aerobics class it's all senior citizens, and I love them so much because they taught me not to be afraid of the aging process. When I would sit with them after class in the hot tub and listen to them and they would talk about, oh, how much they liked 50 Shades of Grey, I thought, oh, I'm going to be fine. You don't lose who you are when you become a senior. You just become more of who you are. And I think that's exciting.
That's Jen Lancaster in conversation with Carol Marks, New York Times bestselling author, and her book is titled I Regret Nothing, a memoir published by NAL. Coming up in the next half hour, we're going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment. Michael Harrison here with you on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Very proud to be with you on this program. This program has been on the air in one form or another consistently now for over two decades. Kind of runs below the radar. It's heard on weekends on great talk radio stations around the country. And what I'm really proud about in terms of this program in which I have the opportunity to serve as anchor, not as host. Carol Marks is the host, and I certainly am not the only voice on this show. We have a round table of outstanding personalities, experts, and broadcasters. What I love about this show is that in an industry marked by concern, focus, obsession with youth, and believe me, I'm about as young thinking as anybody you'll meet. Sometimes I'm even accused of being immature. But so I'm all for that, and I'm all for looking ahead. But I'm also for fairness, and I'm also for respect. And the media in America, driven by, obviously, Madison Avenue and commercial concerns, focuses primarily on young people. And if somebody's over 50 or 55 or 60, they quite often find that there's a lot lacking in terms of what's available in the mainstream media. So this program, which was conceived and developed by Carol Marks more than 20 years ago, originally was called Senior Focus, and it evolved into A Touch of Gray, and I became involved with it along the way, is something that really provides a service in as much as it unashamedly, unabashedly, unapologetically brings information to people via this wonderful medium of radio that is of use, of interest, of service, of comfort, of support to people over 50 years of age and their families, which is why I say at the beginning of the program, children of all ages, because so many people in their 50s find themselves in a situation that has been kind of accurately and colorfully termed the sandwich generation. meaning they have children, adult children, still living with them, and abiding by the rule that came down a long time ago, honor thy father and thy mother, they have their parents living with them. In many cases, these parents are in their 80s, 90s, and are living in a home. And the amount of pressure that can be put on somebody dealing with adult children and senior parents all under one roof is extraordinary, and it's a phenomenon that in many ways I applaud. I'm all for families staying together. But also there are people who are in need of support and information. So in many ways, A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, is in fact a program for children of all ages. But I salute Carol Marx. I think that she has done and continues to do a remarkable job. And she does it under sometimes the worst of conditions because, like the rest of us, she's not getting any younger either. But she drives herself to research and get the information needed and select guests and topics. And not only that, she travels around the world and brings information from other countries on how their healthcare systems operate and how the services that they provide for senior citizens there are taken care of and done. And she brings that information back, not to mention she acts as a model, as a role model for people to get up and get out and live life and do things. And she's done everything from, she's explored, you know, if there were four corners on this planet, as the saying goes, she's been to all four of them. Check her out at the website, atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. And I just wanted to mention that she is one fine lady, and we're grateful to be involved with her in this project.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. It is important to address a personal emergency response system in your home in case of falls or injuries. AARP encourages their use for many older Americans to enhance independence and security, especially for those living alone. Many brands of PERS are available on the market, and seniors should consider their specific needs and budget before deciding on a system. The Federal Trade Commission provides free online information. One can get a system as basic as wearing a necklace or bracelet and push a button that will transmit to an installed response center through your landline telephone. In the event of an emergency with falls, chest pain, a suspected intruder, a press of the button will have a 911 ambulance dispatched to your home, even if you cannot reach your phone. PERS systems can be rented or purchased through local hospitals and are affordable and serviced by representatives. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just moments from now will be interviewing Dr. Brooks Edwards, the transplant cardiologist and director of the William J. von Liebig Center for Transplantation and Clinical Regeneration at Mayo Clinic. He's also a professor of medicine and a consultant in the Division of Cardiovascular Disease, the Department of Internal Medicine at the Mayo Clinic. And they're going to talk about organ donation and transplantation. That sounds very, very informative, Richard, and we look forward to that as we try to bring people information that helps them get through this part of life. So it's 4th of July weekend, and I hope that you have been celebrating accordingly with soda, pretzels, and beer. Do you remember that?
You sound like the Nat King Cole, Lazy, wow. Hazy, Crazy Days of Summer.
You remember that song.
Sure.
I mean, how many people, if you went to a mall and you asked 100 people at random and you said to them, what does soda, pretzels, and beer mean to you? How many do you think would remember that it was hazy, crazy, lazy? What was it? Lazy, hazy?
Lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Nat King Cole. Circa 1959, I think.
No, later. Later, later, later. I would say it's more like 1964. 63, 64. That was one of those tunes where somebody from the old days had a hit in the middle of the pop 60s. Sort of like Everybody Loves Somebody by Dean Martin. Frank Sinatra, That's Life. There's a whole bunch of them. The guys that were big in the 50s and the 40s, they'd have like one hit in the middle of the 60s.
It came out in 1963.
Did it really? You just checked it out? All right. Yep. Yeah. You see, I was a pop music freak back in my teen years. I used to track songs and I used to follow stuff. And I was a huge fan of summer music. I thought that the summer songs, you know, hazy, crazy, lazy, hazy, I can't remember, but roll out those sleeves, you know, and when he went, those days of soda and pretzels and beer. So I love that song.
And Nat King Cole was a favorite of my parents. I remember them loving it. And he had a television show, remember? And he would smoke, I think it was Chesterfield cigarettes while he was singing. And he had that kind of raspy voice. You know,
very
voice.
Beautiful voice, lovely personality. And he was, in many ways, a pioneer in race relations and civil rights movement. He was the first major black entertainer to have a weekly variety show on network television.
And he had an album out called Cole Español, an album sung entirely in Spanish.
Interesting.
Which I think was unheard of at that time. And he was very, very popular. He had that Sunday that summer. Ramblin' Rose was his big hit.
Yes,
remember
yes,
that,
yes,
1962?
Yes, 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 that was a big one. Ramblin' Rose. Well, you leave me hanging out there.
And he died in 1965, only a couple of years after that Lazy, Hazy, Crazy Days. But his biggest hit, his last hit, was Cat Ballou. Remember that? The theme from that movie with Jane Fonda and Lee Marvin.
I remember the movie. I don't remember the song. I remember...
Cat Ballou, Cat Ballou.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember him basically having really big hits in the 50s. Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa. And how about the really big one, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire? That was written by Mel Torme in the heat of the summer in the San Fernando Valley.
Yep.
The Christmas song. But 4th of July, you know, people celebrate and they have soda, pretzels, beer, hot dogs, barbecues, fireworks, the whole thing. But you know what? It makes me think, 39 years ago, when the Declaration of Independence, I just pulled that number out of my head. I don't know whether I'm correct or not, how many years ago it was, but I still remember the bicentennial. You had 56 politicians who got together in Philadelphia and signed their names to a document declaring war on the most awesome military power on the planet, the British Empire. They had nothing but basically ragtag armies and guerrilla warfare. And if that war were not successful, it would have guaranteed each and every one of them would have their necks in a noose. And they did it anyway.
Well, they were considered traitors.
Right.
The United States wasn't the United States. The colonies were under British rule. They were considered part of England. And they were declaring their independence. And it's interesting because we look at that date as Independence Day, but until we won the war, which happened 5 years later in 1781, we weren't really independent because at any time, if England had won the war, they could have taken it back.
Exactly, and they could have declared, look, we even had a war in, the War of 1812, it's, you know, which was sort of like the extension of the Revolutionary War, which went for 8 years. But the point I was making is that these people were politicians, or better referred to, I think, as statesmen. They risked their lives for what they believed. Now, do you think that there is anybody in the political scene today that would do that? Any current politician would sign a document that would risk their life with the odds are against it being successful? I doubt it.
And you're absolutely right, because the odds were against it being successful. And people were, Tories, you know, we look back at Tories as those were the lily-livered people that didn't want the independence. A lot of the Tories thought, you know, we can work with England. We can be independent without a war someday. We don't have to go to war to prove this. So the Patriots, the ones that actually, and I'm not talking about your beloved New England Patriots, but the Patriots back then were, felt they had to grab it by having a, violence in a war. And, it's interesting that a lot of what we consider terrorism today was a common tactic amongst the American Revolutionaries.
Well, that's why I called it a guerrilla war. And, of course, terrorism depends on whose side you're on. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to listen to a very informative conversation about organ transplantation, and then we'll come back and continue our discussion. Richard Neer is with us. I'm Michael Harrison. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray, continuing in a moment.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. New guidelines from the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism for persons 65 and older reveal that if women drink more than 7 drinks per week or greater than 3 drinks per occasion, and men 14 drinks per week or greater than 4 drinks per occasion, you're at risk for illness or injury. As the body ages, the tolerance to alcoholic beverages decreases. Literally, at 65 and older, you're unable to process alcoholic beverages as, say, a person that is 45. Alcoholic overuse and intolerance can worsen mental confusion, problems with balance and falls, depressive disorders, dehydration, inadequate nutrition, adverse interaction with some medications, and can lead to social isolation. One drink is 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of liquor, or the amount in a shot glass. Are you ready to acknowledge that at age 65 and older, that fewer than 7 drinks per week or 1 drink per day is the limit and offers you the advantages of leading a healthier and safer lifestyle? I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
When we ran out, we stopped using it.
Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished? We thought everything was fine, and that was not a good thing.
No.
He started stinking. It was awful.
Shedding comes back. Loss of hair, lots of dandruff.
Scratching will return. His shedding will increase.
If I ever took Roy off of Dinovite, he would go back to his hair loss.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dinovite.
When I get to about 3/4.
Oh, no. I've got a couple more scoops.
It's time to place my order.
Dinovite.com.
Each and every day, she is getting a Dinovite.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
Don't do what I did and run out.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys. Just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and now, as promised, here's our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation with Dr. Brooks Edwards. He's a transplant cardiologist and the director of the William J. von Liebig Center for Transplantation and Clinical Regeneration at Mayo Clinic.
And the Mayo Clinic has recently surveyed consumers about organ donation, and they've tried to get some insights into the customers' perceptions and building awareness, understanding, and support for organ donation. And Dr. Edwards, what were the results? What did you find out from this survey?
Well, we were interested in understanding how consumers felt about organ donation because Mayo Clinic serves a large number of patients who are waiting and receive organ transplants. Between our three sites in Minnesota, Arizona, and Florida, we'll do roughly 1,000 solid organ transplants this year. We surveyed individuals across the country, and we were pleased to identify that two-thirds, 66% of individuals would want to be organ donors if they died suddenly and were in a situation where they could donate their organs. That number's actually increased about 5% just over the last 2 years, and we were pleased with that.
Doctor, is there a critical mass? In other words, is there a number that you need to attain in order to have a sufficient supply of tissue and organs?
Well, we are certainly undersupplied. So right now, there are 125,000 Americans waiting for organ transplantation. You could fill the Rose Bowl Stadium and have 25,000 people waiting outside, and that's the number of people who are currently on a list waiting for organ transplantation.
Now, how do you organize that? In other words, do you have massive computer files of people in need and also people who have agreed to donate in case, tragically, they die and you're able to harvest the organs? How does that work?
Right. So it's administered by a government-affiliated agency called the United Network for Organ Sharing, UNOS. And each organ is a little different in terms of the region where donors come from and so on. But UNOS maintains the waiting list. And when an organ donor becomes available, that information goes into the UNOS computers, and it identifies the patients with the highest priority who would potentially benefit from that organ. But the other thing to remember is that there are opportunities for living organ donations. So kidney transplantation and, to a lesser extent, liver transplantation can be done with living donors. And those are individuals who come forward and they identify that they started life with two kidneys, but they really only need one. And they may donate a kidney to a family member, a friend, a coworker, or even a complete stranger. And there are altruistic donors. Here at Mayo Clinic, every year we have a number of individuals who come forward who say, I have more kidney than I need, and I'd like to donate a kidney to someone in need. And that's really an amazing gift.
Dr. A Touch of Gray is aimed at people over 50. Is there an age limit in terms of donating organs? In other words, if you're 70 years old and you're willing to donate a kidney, do you say, well, gee, the kidney is too old? How does that work?
Well, it really depends. It's very individual. And so we would never exclude a donor just based on age, but we would try and take all the factors into account. Just this week at Mayo Clinic, transplanted a liver from a donor well beyond their 70s. And so there are older individuals who have good organs and can still save lives. And also tissues, so things like cornea can be obtained from older individuals and make a tremendous impact. So I would encourage everyone, regardless of their age, if they're interested in organ donation, they want to make sure their family members know about it. And then if the situation arises, the transplant teams will evaluate what organs might be suitable.
Doctor, is there a website or a telephone number where people can get more information?
Right. We encourage people to go to the website donatelife.net. And that's a national website where they can learn more about organ donation. And if they're not identified already as an organ donor, they can sign up to be an organ donor on that website. MayoClinic.org has a lot of information about transplantation and an opportunity to sign up if you wanted to be an altruistic kidney transplant donor.
Dr. Brooke Edwards, in conversation with Richard Neer, he's a transplant cardiologist and the director of the William J. von Liebig Center for Transplantation and Clinical Regeneration at Mayo Clinic. We'll have more conversation with Richard Neer when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. You may recognize the symptoms of elderly depression, loss of appetite, weight loss, social withdrawal, problems with hygiene, neglecting personal well-being, or even a sadness that lasts over 2 weeks. Sound familiar? Here's what you can do about it. Exercise, eat well, and don't forget to socialize. Researchers at Duke University suggest exercising at least 3 times a week to keep the body and mind healthy. That means swimming, walking, and maybe light exercise classes with the approval of your medical doctor. Another key to happiness is maintaining self-esteem through clubs and groups. You might consider the gardening club or a musical choir. And lastly, treat your body well and it will thank you by feeling well. That means practicing good nutrition and eating well-balanced meals daily. Naturally, the needs of patients vary, but feel free to consult a geriatric specialist to make a personalized treatment plan. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Retrievers, Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with 4 legs and a tail. My husband and I train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. And our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed a very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat, but adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite's the bomb.
Tell everybody we know about Dynavite.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite, it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com. You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're rejoining our friend and senior correspondent Richard Neer, and excellent conversation about transplantation with Dr. Brooks Edwards. Richard, and going back to our earlier conversation, thinking about the founding fathers. So as I was mentioning before, there were 56 statesmen or political figures, members of the Constitutional Congress, signed their names to a document. Would have resulted in their death, and I don't know. I don't believe we have in the political system today. Maybe the system doesn't even allow it. Anyone who comes close to that type of truth and dedication to the principles of serving the public and building a nation and paving the way to the future for its own sake, and then stepping out of the way and letting it go on. I mean, it's like a different world, isn't it?
Yeah, and think of the compromises that had to be made. I think a lot of us get our history from movies like 1776, but you remember South Carolina did not want anti-slavery messages in the Declaration of Independence. Remember they had that big battle over that, and John Adams wanted it, Jefferson wanted it, but Rutledge and the people from South Carolina and Georgia fought it. And eventually, Jefferson and Franklin gave in.
Well, they gave in because they figured we better at least have a nation, so somewhere down the road we can eliminate slavery. But we'll never eliminate slavery if we don't unite as a nation and have a system by which we can talk about these things.
Exactly.
It was a compromise they made. They didn't compromise their principles. They just showed a certain amount of organizational and political negotiation savvy. And these guys were brilliant. I mean, when you think about it, they were absolutely brilliant. One other thing you mentioned before, and just switching gears here, but staying within the theme of soda, pretzels, and beer in the 4th of July, I think Nat King Cole smoked Kool.
Kool cigarettes, yes.
Kool, which were mentholated cigarettes. I remember, you know, back in the days when I was a smoker, I couldn't handle the mentholated cigarettes and the cigarettes that didn't have filters. Do you remember, like, I think Camels didn't have Chesterfield, mm-hmm. and they were little stubby cigarettes. But you often saw people smoking on TV. As you said, he would be smoking a cigarette. It was very common on talk shows to see them smoking. And cigarettes often sponsored these programs. Do you remember the old gold dancers?
The old gold dancers, no, but I do know that Nat King Cole actually would smoke 3 packs a day, and he thought that helped him get his sound.
Oh, boy.
And sadly, he died of lung cancer.
Yeah, yeah. Many stars did, and they were heavy smokers. The old gold singers, or dancers, rather, they used to do live commercials on live television. And Old Gold was a cigarette brand. I don't believe it exists anymore. And it used to have coupons on the back of the pack so that you would buy the cigarettes and then you would be able to redeem them for gifts and prizes. You know, like coupons on a cereal box.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they would have the live commercial would be 3 or 4 dancers in sort of like these old gold cigarette boxes, so you saw their legs coming out of the bottom, and they would dance. They'd be dancing cigarette boxes, cigarette packs. It's got to be on YouTube. Let's check it out after the program. Richard, thank you so much for joining us on this holiday weekend. Happy holiday to everybody. Hope you're enjoying family and safe fun on the 4th of July. Richard Neer is a regular member of our cast of interesting people around the table here. It's an ensemble show. Thank you, Beverly Santinella, on the front line. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.